Hello.
Good evening.
Welcome to
The Bus Vector.
The Bus Vector. Coming to you on this Friday bus apocalypse.
Yes, the bus apocalypse here in Wellington, New Zealand.
It's upon us, folks. Don't go outdoors.
Or if you do go outdoors, maybe don't catch a bus.
Well, you could try and catch a bus, but good luck.
Yeah, that's a good point. People are trying, aren't they? People are trying.
Yep, they're really trying to go about their everyday normal lives that had no reason to be disrupted. pretty weird how that happens.
Well, no, I think you'll find that the hub and spoke technology implemented does improve efficiency.
Well, that's right. Only 5% of bus rides require a transfer. Now
that's
that
true.
The bus doesn't go anywhere.
Only 5%, which, let me just do the math. That makes Wellington's population approximately 10 million or something. Cause if we just
yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. 5%. Yeah, no, it's a bus apocalypse. I think we talked about this last week, the last week we were here. It's been 2 weeks, 2 weeks of no bus factor. I think.
Two very long weeks without the bus factor.
The bus just stopped in the middle of the road. Oh yeah. Cars in the way.
Hey, that one's, is that a blue bus?
It was a blue.
We're going to have to start. We're going to have to start counting the blue buses. All right. We've got a lot to cover this week, folks. I don't know if you're not a Wellingtonian, you're probably not up with what's been going on here.
We're going to need to give a overview.
Yeah. Should we do a recap? We'll do a bus apocalypse recap.
Bus apocalypse recap. Here we are. So when did this all start? Well, when was it first announced? It must have been only like 3 months ago.
It really depends. Some people, Greater Wellington Regional Council will tell you that they've been planning this for 7 years.
7 years? That's a lot of time to get it right, right? If I had 7 years. Oh, what? When?
Yeah, that was just straight through. Yep. All right. Increment. Let's get this started.
Okay, geez. Wait, was he turning? Where did he come from? I really needed to have the instant replay up because I didn't see it.
Yeah, let's get the instant replay going because this is going to be chaotic.
Okay, so we have our instant replay.
Oh, hello, JJ Jolly Jim.
Oh, is that how you pronounce the name? I honestly had no idea how to pronounce it.
Yeah, that's pretty close enough.
Yeah, that's a good way of pronouncing it. Here we are. Here's our... Wait, no. Wait.
Steven's just hooking up the action replay. So biggest change to the Wellington bus system in 30 years. Well, also the only change, really, to the Wellington bus system in 30 years.
They change minor routes.
Yeah, that's
stuff,
right. I mean, they bump the prices up, you know, tweak a route here and there, that kind of stuff. But yeah, NZ Bus, incumbent operator of the Wellington bus system, is out, replaced by... company called Trans Metro, I think, with a Z. Transurban.
They are, so they're still in though, right? Like there's still multiple companies.
That's right. Yeah. So NZ Bus still owns most of the buses, I believe, and they're contracted to do the actual maintenance, but the driving and scheduling and all that stuff is now Transurban.
On all routes or just most routes? Because I thought they still own some routes.
I think, yeah, most of the routes. Yeah.
Almost
I mean,
all of them.
There's a few notable ones that are still operated by NZ Bus, like the airport bus is still operated by NZ Bus.
Also, no one is the fuck every person in Wellington, we're not going to let you use Snapper Bus.
Yeah, so this is an interesting case, right? Because NZ Bus, owned by Infratil, same company that owns Snapper.
Yeah, it's so dumb.
And the airport.
Yeah.
And so the company that stands to benefit the most from this is being difficult about... upgrading their buses to, well, quote-unquote upgrading their buses to, quote-unquote, continue using Snapper, even though I'm sure they have Snapper readers on them. Yeah.
Yeah, they do. And even if they didn't, guess who makes the Snapper readers?
Yeah, that's right. It's Infratil. So
there's something really
weird going on there.
If I was the council, I would be looking at basically being like, "Hey, no, that's illegal."
So there is a proposal at the moment to make a legal requirement that airports have to have public bus service.
Yeah.
If that passes, then Metlink will be given full access to the airport, which I think is quite reasonable.
Is this because the airport flyer is not public at the moment, technically?
I'm not 100% sure. I think it's no longer going to be part of the Metlink system now that they're getting rid of Snapper and divesting themselves of that.
But my question is, can the airport not just go ahead and say, oh, but we do have public bus access via the airport flyer?
Yeah, I think it's going to be contentious, right? Like, yeah. Although at the same time, there's been the rumor, well, not really a rumor. I mean, I think everybody knows at this point that NZ Bus doesn't want to operate that route anymore either. So there's the company that does the Auckland airport bus has been looking at picking
Sky
up the
something,
yeah Skybus yes Skybus. Skybus has been looking at picking up the Wellington airport bus as well. So
just it's part. There's no reason to have. It should be a Metlink bus because Metlink buses already go.
They're the ones that hypothetically connect to the rest of the bus system. Like, you don't want to be getting a bus that has a completely different timetable to all the other buses.
Completely different payment system.
Yeah.
And like when those buses, like the Mirabah bus, goes like just right past it anyway.
Yeah, that's right. So
under the hub and spoke topology, I'm sure you could work something out.
So I have a feeling, gentle readers, that this is going to be basically a bus rant episode. Not a whole lot has happened in the tech industry this week, but boy howdy has a lot happened in the busosphere. So just sit down, make sure you're seated comfortably, because we've got a lot of complaining to get through.
Yeah. So I did when I tweeted out about it, I think I said something like, hey, this is the Busapocalypse episode, and there may be some information security news, but don't count on it. I think some people would have read that and thought, oh, those jokers.
Yeah, what a funny joke, those people who think that we're not really serious about the bus part of this. So, yeah, to recap, big old shakeup of the bus system. Basically, every route changed. A few of the big ones, like the 14, the 1, the 3, they're all fairly similar, but
the ones are double decker now.
Yeah, some of them are double decked. There are two electric double deckers, which is pretty cool. So
let's
not lose sight of the good stuff, right?
Oh, so we've got. I could have sworn there were. I thought there was more because they were like.
There are multiple double deckers, but only two are electric. I think there's
ten
in total.
Yeah.
So let's think about some of the good stuff before we get into the extremely long list of complaints that we have.
This is how I did my feedback for a system that was a red light and a half. Right, like
I'm too incensed by the Busapocalypse to be watching the red light situation. Sometimes there are just bigger things that you've got to take into account.
I don't know. It's kind of fun, although we'll get to.
There's a lot of comparative analysis that needs to be done now. Like maybe Transurban drivers are better at not running red lights. I mean, it seems unlikely, but
it does seem unlikely. Also, wasn't it like NZ Bus laid off all their bus drivers and Transit thus needed to hire a bunch of bus drivers? Wouldn't they just have?
Yeah, it's interesting. So when these new buses were unveiled, they invited the transport minister to give a speech at the opening. And he basically said, screw you guys, what you've done should be illegal and we're going to make it illegal. Thank you very much. And then Mike dropped and walked off, which is not what the bus companies had in mind, I think, when they rolled out their fancy new electric double-decker and invited the transport minister to come in.
Oh, wow. So he did that because he didn't like kind of like the driver's rights being kind of stomped on?
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. I mean, the initial figure that we had from the regional council was 106 drivers lost their jobs, but I've just seen today some unsubstantiated reports that it might have been as many as 300 people lost their jobs in this bus restructure.
I am not sure I understand. 300 people lose their jobs. That means there has to be 300 drivers picked up from somewhere, right?
Well, they've brought in bus drivers from all around the country.
A double decker with blue lights.
Oh, a blue double decker, a red light. That's the first here on the bus.
That bus is backing up. Did you see that? He was
That's a valiant maneuver. Generally, buses shouldn't reverse, particularly in public places.
Yeah, because people walk behind those buses.
That's
the
kind of thing you want to do with a handler or a reversing camera.
Yeah.
Yeah. So where were we? Okay. So
hang on. Do double deckers count as two buses?
Oh yeah. Easily two. Yeah.
Okay, so that's four then. We're gonna bump that up to four.
Easily. We'll have to think about that. But I think for now, you know, everyone in Wellington currently is trying to apply their perfectly valid bus logic to this new chaotic bus system, and I think we should continue doing that too.
Yeah.
So what were we talking about? Yeah, so a bunch of people lost their jobs, right?
Yeah.
And yet Transurban had to bring in quote unquote drivers from other parts of the country who don't know Wellington, don't know the routes. Mm-hmm. They've got them apparently working 14-hour days.
Maybe not knowing the routes isn't an advantage though. Because you know you get those bus drivers sometimes who will just not follow the route. They'll be like, oh, we go this way, right? And one of the buses is like, whoa!
No. Yeah. All right. Yeah, there's some great ones. I've got a whole list of these that we can go through later. There's some good ones that have come up just in the last week that we can talk about. But
with the drivers, though, so this has been an ongoing issue even before this change, that bus driver companies have been complaining that they can't get enough drivers. So before this change happened, must have been about a month ago, they had a morning where they had something like 20 bus drivers off or something.
Yeah, that's right. So there was speculation about that, right? So in the lead up to the busapocalypse, we had a lot of services cancelled. Mm-hmm. According to the Tramways Union, there were no cancelled services and everything was fine.
What?
Some people who were asked said that a lot of drivers had been using up their leave because their contracts were finishing.
Yeah, sick leave, that kind of thing.
That seems like the most likely explanation. Mm-hmm. Metlink had said that they had a lot of drivers out who were being trained. Although training drivers in the last week before the bus changeover seems kind of bizarre to me. So I'm assuming it was just everyone either CBF'd or were using up their leave.
Yeah, I mean,
unless you believe the Tramways Union who said that, yeah, buses were running as normal, there were no cancellations.
I personally didn't miss a bus, which I think, and I don't think any of the owners of the Tramway Union did. So that's enough evidence for me.
Yeah, and I mean, in spite of the bus apocalypse, the bus has still occasionally been coming past my house and I've managed to get into work. I have no idea how to get back from town, but, you know, I'm like 50% on board. So
wait, how does the bus... So, because the routes have changed, they've moved to a hub-and-spoke topology. How has that affected you getting into work?
Well, it's an interesting question, Stephen. So I think this isn't just something that affects me. I think this is something that really affects a lot of people in Wellington.
Oh, no, it definitely does. But I just thought one specific example.
Yeah, so for me, if I go to the Metlink site, or if I went to the Metlink site prior to the bus changeover,
yep,
it said that better and more bus options were available. But
yeah,
taking a kind of... an evidential view of what they're actually offering. It's the same bus service, but it just doesn't go as far. So I'm not really sure how that qualifies.
Better.
Yeah, it's really just fewer and less convenient for me.
Yeah.
So previously, if you're not familiar with the Wellington bus system, we had this kind of delightfully Baroque bus arrangement where a bus would start in one suburb, it would drive all the way out of that suburb through the center of town and then into some other diametrically opposed suburb, mm-hmm, right?
It actually was a very confusing system for me who came from Hamilton where they use like there's one hub, the transport center,
yeah,
and, you know.
Yeah, so Wellington has had a delightfully, you know, Wellington-y, weird, yeah, hashtag weird Wellington kind of bus system. But yeah, it honestly worked. Like for off-peak travel, you could get on a bus and you pretty much guaranteed you could stay on that bus for like an hour and a half and go somewhere else.
You just
right?
get somewhere and it would just be like one trip. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. But you know, a lot of the time that bus might only have you and one other person on it. And so you can kind of see that there's some inefficiency there.
Yeah.
And so we've moved now to a system where these transit hubs around Wellington are used. That there are a few flaws in this system. Mm-hmm. Like, for one thing, it kind of assumes that a bus will arrive at a predictable time and place, which historically, you know, Wellington buses,
yeah,
they haven't been great at it. You know, you've got to use Metlink minutes when you look at the the bus schedule. And
there is the ghost bus problem.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, so, look, a bus is arriving in 5 minutes. And 5 minutes later, the bus has already passed your stop. And you're like, wait, what?
Which is interesting because the buses are all fitted with extremely high-tech real-time GPS tracking systems. And so that 5 minutes is based on like the physical position of the bus.
So you would think it can't teleport.
Yeah, you would think that it's actually not possible for that system to be wrong, but it frequently is.
Yeah, it's a bit weird. I mean, it's still managed by computers and programmers and probably bad programmers, so, you know.
Yeah. I think we can all agree that in general computers aren't that great.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Then you know what they should hire? Just 1,000 people who sit there tracking the bus and manually typing in when they think the bus is about to arrive.
You know, we don't know that that's not what they do, right?
You know, it would actually be practical if you outsourced it overseas, right? To say, here's the GPS position of the bus, here's where it needs to get to, guess, right? It would probably be cheaper than programmers for at least like the first 5 years.
I do feel like at this stage, we probably shouldn't be trying to come up with ways of making the Wellington bus system less humane overall.
I'm not saying that they should do it. I'm saying you're right. It would be cheaper.
It's probably possible. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, well, we've heard quite a lot of complaint from people about this. So they've changed to a hub and spoke topology.
How many hubs do we have? Do you know?
There's four or five. Some of them are just kind of like muddy holes in the ground because they haven't actually been built yet.
It's like, hey, you're at a hub and it's like there's no shelter.
Yeah, temporary plastic shelters. Yeah. Yeah, it is the middle of winter, the perfect time to change the bus system, yeah. So, you know, there's been a lot of complaint from people because we've got this hub and spoke thing now. A lot of what Metlink considered to be, you know, unnecessary bus stops have been removed, which has, you know, led to complaint from disabled people who rely on a stop being near their house. You know, maybe they moved somewhere because it was close to a bus stop and now they have to climb a hill. So, for instance,
I think that's a lot of the kind of complaints I see had to do with, like, hey, maybe the bus system does work if you are capable of walking for 15 minutes. If you're not, whoa, what's going on here?
Yeah, it really stomps on the communities who are most vulnerable and most need the bus system.
Yeah.
To take this kind of, it's kind of like the US fighter jet thing, right? Where they were like, yeah, we're going to just measure all of our fighter pilots and average them out, and then we're going to make this average seat. Right? And you end up with a seat that no human being fits into because it's not anthropometric. It's not designed for any real person.
Yeah,
it's designed for like a hypothetically non-existent average person.
Yeah, it's like people talk about that a lot in web development, right? They're like, think about, you know, your average user. And it's like, that's not a person.
Yeah.
Your average user is not a person.
That's right. If we look at, you know, we took like an agile approach to this bus thing and look at, you know, like user stories for people who actually take the bus.
Yeah.
You know, kids, for instance, with parents who want to go to the zoo from the train.
Oh, that's a, yeah. That's
yeah,
a
good so one. This is a great one. This one's come up a bunch this week. Daniel McLaughlin did a really good blog about this. It's worth having a look at. But previously, you could just catch a bus from the train station to the zoo.
That makes a lot of sense because people want to go to the zoo. They have fairly high numbers going there.
Exactly. And it's a complicated thing to, you know, wrangle 14 children who want to go to the zoo on the bus, right?
Yeah.
And in my experience, taking the bus early on Sunday mornings, basically 100% of people who get on the bus want to go to the zoo.
Yeah.
Like, even if it's not a bus to the zoo, there are people who don't take the bus normally. They need the easiest possible way of getting to the zoo, right?
Yeah.
And that is a serious, that's a solid public function. Mm-hmm. But now, oh, well, okay. So Metlink's response to this is that it's only 3 transfers to get to the zoo. You only have to stop in 3 places,
transfers.
Wait for an additional bus, and then take that extra bus, the last leg of which you can walk faster than what the bus comes.
Yeah, if you want to brave fucking walking down like 15 minutes with a bunch of children who are like, what the zoo?
Yeah.
It's already been like fucking half an hour, 45 minutes.
Yeah, it's perfectly fine. It's a perfectly fine system that was definitely thought out by actual human beings who have ever taken a bus before.
Okay, but Metlink does have a solution.
Yeah,
and what is
it? That's true. Yeah, it's true. So if you're unhappy about the bus, you can talk to Metlink's ambassadors.
So they stand at stops. Is that how it works? Because I haven't caught a bus in a while, so I don't actually.
That is correct. So some of the bigger the transit hubs, like the Newtown hub, they will they have their ambassadors who will tell you about how inconvenient the bus system is now, and they will quote unquote take your feedback.
They're basically just. They're paid to stand there and take abuse to make people feel better, right? That's kind of how I read into it.
Yeah, I think that's approximately the way that it works. Yeah.
People don't get the same satisfaction of filling out a feedback form on a website as they do being like, buses to a person.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, Metlink would have to store that feedback somewhere and maybe act on it. So I don't know if the stream viewers can see this, but you might have noticed something different about the buses that are coming past as night falls here on the Bus Factor.
Oh, yes. Yes, what is that? Tell us about that.
So there's an urban legend around that if you light public spaces with a blue light, it either makes people commit suicide less often or it makes it harder to take drugs.
What?
Or some other thing like that.
Yeah,
happens.
No, harder to take drugs is the one I've heard because you can't see your veins because they're blue. You light them in blue vein. I didn't know about the suicide thing.
Yeah, so and by complete coincidence, almost all of the new buses that have been installed in the city now have unbelievably overbearing bright blue lights.
My gosh.
All night long.
During the day.
It's like a 24-hour rave. I don't think they have them on during the day. I think
they do. They just. Okay. So I saw it and I'm like, is that the blue lights? Because I was like, huh, that's not very bright. At night, they're just these like just these bright blue blobs you can see traveling through the streets. It's so bright. It's crazy.
It's kind of unbelievable. And Twitter, of course, is just full of these horrifying washed out blue photos people complaining about.
Did you see Sam put one up where I was like, it's got to be a filter, but it's just so bright
and
blue.
No filter, I'm afraid.
No filter.
Hashtag no filter here.
Yeah. Was that? Did that guy just go through a red light?
Yeah, that was extremely red. Yeah.
Oh my God.
We're going to have to count that one.
Now, to be fair, if I was a bus driver in these circumstances, I would probably be like, fuck this, I'm not making my bus late. People are already angry enough.
Yeah, no, for absolutely sure. And also, keep in mind that these are new drivers. They probably don't know where they're going.
They don't know about the bus factor. That's right. They don't know which intersections they can and can't run.
Yeah. And so what does Metlink have to say about the blue buses? Well, you see, actually, guys, the blue buses are for operational reasons.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah.
This is Metlink's official answer. It's that the unbearable blue lights make it slightly safer for the drivers. A feature which, despite being very cheap to fit, was never installed on any of the previous buses.
Yes, but I think you will find that Metlink states this is a very common occurrence in the rest of the world. Very, very common. So it's fine.
Yeah, and I've definitely been on an unbearable blue bus before. That, you know, when they came to Wellington, I was like, finally, brought that blue bus thing that I love from those other cities.
Oh, there you can. Can you see how? Yeah, you can.
So look at that, folks.
A glowing neon, like blue.
Someone, hey, it's the electric bus.
What was it?
Yeah, the electric bus went past. Oh. Well, it's always nice to see the electric bus. Yeah, but there goes another one. So I'm really interested in the spectral content of that light, because that's like black light blue. That's
right? Like
that's like UV blue.
When you see it, you're like, that's not a blue light, right? That's like a black light.
Deep, monochromatic LED blue of the bluest blue phosphor kind. It's kind of incredible to look at.
It makes me feel like someone had some leftover lights and was like, okay, we got them. Do you want them?
Well, I mean, let's apply Occam's razor here. So the new buses, extremely ugly color scheme. I think it's very clear that the people who are in charge of picking these things from Metlink don't have an eye for color. And so maybe the same people who brought you bright lime and bright yellow buses probably think that bright blue is a great color combo for that.
Yeah, maybe they thought people would be like, wow, there's cool new blue buses. It's like you're in the night. It's like a little, like a 24/7 rave.
Yeah, that's right. Metlink has tried to spin it as a feature, you know, like a unique, fun, nauseating thing about the Wellington bus system.
Oh, yeah, because
I love my bus to be an experience. You know, like I don't get on the bus just because I want to go somewhere. Like I get on the bus because I want to be on the bus, you know?
That's too real, because that's an attitude a lot of people have. Well, that bus is fucking hooning. People have that experience. They're like, we want our people to feel... They describe it in those terms. It's weird. Now, blue light has some other effects, right? So
yeah,
flux.
Yeah, that's right. It's the it's widely known as the easiest way to disrupt someone's circadian rhythm is to expose them to very bright blue light at night.
Yeah, which is why you don't want to use your phone or screens at night.
Exactly.
They have a lot of blue in them.
Exactly. Apple products now all come with a thing that tints the screen brown at night so that it doesn't mess up your circadian rhythm. So it's nice of Metlink to chuck some stuff in there to keep us pepped, you know, keep us awake.
Like, you're on the bus, fuck you, stay away. Now, this does. Oh, so people also say it can cause migraines and stuff.
Yeah, there's been people talking about migraines. There's been people talking about certain. Apparently, people with certain eye conditions can't be exposed to bright blue light. I mean, I'm just parroting Twitter at this point, so it's a little bit anecdotal. But
I do wonder if the migraine thing is particularly. I don't know the rates on that. Like, that might actually just be, you know, like five people had a migraine for one. You know, maybe it does affect them. Maybe.
Yeah, sure, but. The question still remains.
Why would you do
why?
It?
Why?
Yes, yeah. So
who thought that was a good idea? And I really feel like the explanation that it's operationally required for the windows in the bus to be bright blue is kind of doesn't really stand up to to much scrutiny.
It feels like we have blue lights. What do we say? Less reflections? Yeah, sure, go with that. Like it feels like that kind of thing.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Now. This does actually play into something else, which is, have you seen the new, we talked about bus drivers and the problems, the new hours that they're doing?
Yeah, so I've heard varying reports on this, but it seems like, you know, just because of the general unreadiness and, you know, that the council has admitted that they were not ready for this bus transition, right?
Yeah.
Like initially they said, maybe we need another 6 months and it would have been okay. Now they're trying to tell us that it'll be fine in 6 months, but they've had to bring in drivers from all over the place. They've got not enough drivers, even though they previously had enough drivers. So I don't know what happened to all those people. But
well, I mean, they had more than this, but I don't know if they had enough.
Yeah, but you know, they weren't doing 14-hour shifts. So they've got them on a system now where they there's a lot going on here, right, folks? There's a lot going on. One of the things is most of the buses now go 50 to 100 meters and then stop at a bus transfer hub and then turn around and go back. Right? Mm-hmm. The buses are doing very short trips now, and. it's really sad to see, because, you know, I, on the very first Sunday of the bus apocalypse, I took a bus down from where I live down to the bus depot, because that's all it goes to now. It doesn't go anywhere aside from the bus depot.
The bus depot here in town?
Yeah, the bus depot in town. Yeah. And there were people waiting at the depot, as they usually do, who wanted to get on the bus to go further with the bus where it normally goes, down Courtney Place, down to Southgate, et cetera. And the driver was like, nah, I just stop here now. That's like a, you know, that's like a 1 kilometer bus trip, basically.
Yeah, it's quite short, yeah.
And then the bus turns around and goes back. So they've got drivers doing these little short hops. Then they get off. They take a, what was the language that they were using? Like a voluntary unpaid break.
Oh, yeah. They basically just like, you're off now and this is your break time. Which doesn't make sense, because what are you going to do in your fucking 10-minute break time or whatever the hell it is?
Yeah, and then they've got them running additional routes. And that's quite a stark contrast to the way that this used to work, where you would get the same driver at the same day on the same route. The drivers knew the routes. They knew the passengers. People were friendly with them. You know, it was good. Yeah, we had a rapport with the drivers.
Yeah. Although, to be fair, there were some negative rapports as well.
Yeah.
But
not,
yes.
Generally. Not every system was great. You know, definitely old Metlink had a few drivers who were maybe subpar, but the experience was pretty good overall.
Yeah.
And, you know, to be fair, the new drivers are putting up with an awful lot of shit at the moment, and they seem to be in pretty good spirits about it, right?
Yeah. I wouldn't want to be a bus driver at the moment.
Yeah. They're doing it. Like, the drivers are probably the biggest losers in this whole thing, right? They're being subjected to horrible working conditions, being brought in at late notice to kind of scramble around on routes they don't know, with people who are frustrated because they don't go to the zoo anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I definitely feel, you know, like sympathy towards the bus drivers. Now, I was saying, like, Wellington, we thank our bus drivers here.
Yeah, that's right. We love our bus drivers. Like, Wellington, it's interesting if you compare the rates of usage of public transport in different parts of New Zealand. Take Christchurch, for instance. I think survey undertaken last year showed that something like 25-ish% of people had taken public transport in the past sort of 6 months or so. Yeah. Compared to Wellington, rates are closer to 75-80%.
Oh, wow.
So,
that's,
you know,
like, that's
Wellington
really
is a bus-powered city, and we love the drivers here. We love our weird bus network, and...
Wow, we loved past tense.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
We loved our weird bus network that let you get from A to B.
Yeah, whereas now it's... Yeah, you can do that with 3 transfers.
Yeah.
But only 5% of people have to worry about those transfers.
Yeah, that's right. It's a negligible, you know, probably a couple hundred thousand people have to take transfers. It's totally fine.
Yeah, I do wonder how they came about, like how they managed to come up with this new network, right?
Yeah. So,
because like you say, it doesn't feel very human to do this, does it? Like, it doesn't feel like anyone was like, hey, what about these people who get on this bus? What will they actually experience now?
That's right. You know, between the blue lights and the buses that don't go anywhere anymore, it does kind of feel like this has been just sort of put together with a mathematical model by some people who don't actually take the bus.
Yeah.
You really get the feeling that maybe no human beings were involved in this process.
Well, 7 years as well. Like, the
that,
amount of
that 7-year figure is entirely apocryphal, by the way.
Still, I'm gonna use it.
Yeah.
You must have a bunch of bike shedding at that point, right? Where so many people involved in a project.
The only way that you end up with a bright yellow and lime green bus is designed by committee. Like, that's the only way.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. There were the new bus colors as well, because they have grown on me. I think for a while I was like, and now I'm like, so, you know, that's definitely better.
Yeah, Blair suggests that we should OIA the Regional Council for the Blue Light Related Discussions. I think that is a damn fine use of the Official Information Act. We should definitely do that.
Well, when you have the act available, you do tend to think, I should OIA that.
Yeah.
Let's see what's happening.
It's a great act. It's good that we have that.
Yeah. I was actually thinking, this is quite off topic, I built like a little app for the Buzzet cards in Hamilton. I'll show you it later. They have cards in Hamilton, and they have nowhere to view the balance except for go onto a bus. But I was thinking, do you remember when Amon Ra did his KiwiCon talk about the bus stuff?
Yeah, I sure do. Amon Ra is like Aquaman, but instead of summoning sea creatures, he can summon public transport.
So he did a thing, for those who don't know, where they were using MyFair Classic. He cracked the keys, or they were using default keys, I'm not sure, and was just like, hey, look, the balance is on the card. I thought it'd be interesting to OIA the Hamilton and Waikato Council about what they said at that point, because they had the exact same bus system, right? If you look at the police got contacted down in Christchurch and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and it's also not like the Christchurch bus operators didn't know that the system was bad, right?
Like, yeah, no, they in their emails were like, yeah, we know it's bad. Go to the police anyway. Fuck them, right?
Yeah, everyone loves Amon Ra. He's a real likable character.
Is that sarcasm? They tried to go to the police.
I like Amon Ra.
Yeah, I think he's good. He's good.
Yeah, he's a good sort.
Good. Yeah, he's hacks shells and doesn't afraid of anything.
Yeah, that's right. You need anything implanted in your body? Like, he'll find a way.
Yeah, I mean, we did do that thing on stage once where he, you know, put something inside me on stage. I was actually disappointed. So I was in Hamilton recently for the cybersecurity challenge. I could talk about that. That's InfoSec.
Yeah, that's InfoSec news. We've got a lot more bus stuff.
Okay,
to get through.
We'll move on to it later. But I was just briefly. I was in Hamilton, and I was like, oh man, I've got my Proxmark. I'm gonna crack the MyFair keys and break the bus system. It's gonna be great,
Stephen. You rebel.
I know. So I put the card on, and I was like, oh yeah, I'm gonna run the attack. I'm just gonna check for default keys so I can get one and then crack them. And I ran it, and I was like, every key is F. And I was like, oh, I guess I cracked them now. It was really lame.
Let's again, not losing sight of the positives coming from the bus apocalypse. No more mana or user bus cards.
Oh yes, like that was actually one of the things. As someone who I don't catch buses often, and I think some people have brought up the anxiety around catching buses. I get like public transport anxiety.
Yeah, I can understand that. Particularly in the face of the bus apocalypse.
Yeah, and one thing is when a bus comes up, because they had reasonable range of colors recently, I was like, is this a bus I can catch? If I stand on this
bus, that's right.
Is the bus driver going to be like, what are you doing?
Classic,
you can't catch this.
Classic Wellington situation. A bus turns up. Can you take that bus?
Yeah.
Probably. But if you can't, man, are they going to be mad with you.
Yeah, and you're going to get on and be like, and then you're going to have to like, people are behind you waiting to get on. You could be like, and then in that time, the bus you do need to catch might have just left.
Yeah, that's
so,
right.
So I like the fact you can now just get on a bus and hand over a Snapper card.
Yeah, unless you're going to the airport.
Yeah, or there's a few other ones you can't do.
There's the odd one, but they're a lot less likely that you're going to run into those. I was cautiously optimistic because we had a mini bus apocalypse a few weeks before the actual bus apocalypse.
Was that the one where no bus drivers turned up?
No, the Hutt bus system was changed over as well, and essentially nothing bad happened. Like people notice. Apparently the Hutt bus changes have actually not been too bad. So,
are they small done buses by Metlink?
I'm not fully across that. Okay, yeah. They are Metlink. A voice in my ear is telling me that the Hutt bus system is Metlink as well.
Yeah,
so,
okay.
A win for the bus apocalypse there. The Hutt bus system seems to have been fine. Nobody's too inconvenienced by that one.
Yeah,
so.
I guess if you can do your changes independently, do them independently, and that way you minimize the effect.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a smaller area, obviously, and I think fewer buses. So, less chance for things to go wrong.
Yeah, yeah. The Snapper car was one thing that I thought was a good change.
Yeah, that's completely great. And the new Snapper readers, very slightly nicer than the old ones. They've got an LCD screen. They tell you what stop you're at. They seem to have used the original voice samples that the old Snapper things had, but they play at a higher sample right now.
It's like, please check your balance.
Yeah, it's like, I like that they kept the cheery, like, please pay the driver. Please check your balance.
Please pay the driver?
Yeah, that's what you get if you don't have any money on your card.
Oh, okay.
Or the reader is malfunctioned. It's always blown my mind that the readers sometimes malfunction in a way that they can't tell the difference between zero balance and a bad read. I don't really know how that's possible, but...
So I actually looked into the Snapper cards recently because we have Arfid stuff here and we were just like messing around with it. So they use JCOP, and it looks to me, as someone who does not understand computers, like basically they've just like written some Java code with an entirely custom proprietary kind of like interface for doing it. So, I mean, I can imagine if you built your own card system, which they basically did.
Not conveniently, kind of somebody dropping the head iClass master key into the bus factor chat there. Get it while it's hot, folks.
That one, Amon Ra did that a while ago, yeah. But yes. It's kind of funny. I really enjoyed that also that everyone on every blog post before Amon Ra dropped this was like, I am not going to post that key here. No way. And Amon Ra was like, just do it. And he dropped it everywhere and like it didn't get taken down ever.
Yeah, it's literally right here in the bus factor chat.
Yeah, it's going to be forever preserved. So it's kind of funny when people are like, afraid of overly litigious things and then turns out not to be.
I mean, Amon Ra is a good fall guy for this, right? Living in the land of not very much intellectual property.
Yeah. Oh, at the Cybersecurity Challenge, someone tried to tell the story about Amon Ra and they got pretty good. They were like, oh yeah, this guy, he like, after he finished his talk, got back on a plane and went to Russia because,
close enough.
Because of his talk. I was like, basically he's got the idea.
Yeah. Oh man, I want to know where I want to track the progression of Amon Ra stories because he's practically a mythical figure at this point. Like,
yeah,
he's the loveliest and most unassuming dude when you meet him. But he has this like he has this mythology about him, right?
Yeah,
Amon Ra, master hacker.
Yeah, dropping crazy shit. The other thing is like the stuff he's done is like not super complicated. Like it's the kind of thing where like I mean, if you're an infosec, you can probably sit down. Like I want to do the home detention hacking where he like, you know, wrapped him in foil and just spoofed the GPS. Like,
although how many people speak Chinese well enough to negotiate buying the
is a good point.
Like,
yeah,
his skill set is unique.
Yeah, it is pretty unique. It's a good skill set actually. I know, like as an infosec practitioner, one of the things I've wanted to do for a long time is learn Russian and Chinese because so many resources for things are in Russian and Chinese.
Yeah, absolutely. QQ forums is like a great place to get data sheets.
What, sorry?
Chinese forums, great place to get data sheets.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Russian malware places, they always have like great analysis or like, you know, reverses and stuff. Yeah, it's handy.
Absolutely.
I guess he does have that skill set, yeah. I mean, everyone brings something unique to the table, but it's nice to see people like dropping cool stuff rather than just like, you know, lame stuff. It's like high impact stuff, right?
Yeah, for sure.
It's like the pacemaker research and whatnot.
Yep. I'm pretty happy to say that Amon Ra does some good stuff.
Yeah. Okay, what about the buses?
We got a little bit more bus news. Mm-hmm. So you've probably seen a few go past now. We've got the double-deckers here in Wellington.
Yep.
Hopefully everyone's had a chance to ride the double-decker, get up onto the top rank, get right up by the front glass and pretend you're the driver.
I have a question. Double-deckers seem dumb to me because so let's say you have a bus route. You can run a double-decker once every half an hour. Or a single decker once every 15 minutes?
Yeah, it is an interesting question, right? And it's very central to Metlink's kind of plan for fixing, quote-unquote, the bus congestion on what they refer to as the Golden Mile. So the main route through town is running fewer numbers of higher capacity buses. And I think it's going to be really interesting and, frankly, probably very hard to actually quantitatively tell how effective that has been. Like, it doesn't feel like watching this corner tonight that there are fewer buses or less congestion, right? Like,
no, it feels
anecdotally, it feels completely the same. You still see buses packing up in town. And maybe that's because, you know, we're having this problem at the moment where the buses are often late and end up kind of clustered together, traveling in packs.
Yeah, because they can't really pass each other. So yeah. Just kind of.
And so maybe that'll even out, but it's going to be really interesting. And I really feel like they're probably not going to release figures on.
Yeah, whether it actually works.
Because it's so hard to measure in the first place. Like,
but I also don't think the congestion on the Golden Mile has been a problem. Like, if anything, yes, bus congestion, because that means that if you stand at a bus stop, you will get a bus.
Yeah, that's right. I've certainly never sat at a bus stop and thought, man, I wish there were fewer buses going past here, like fewer places I could go right now.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it feels better to do that. And during the day, you know, they're not full, but they've still got a decent amount of people in them. Like,
that's right. And, you know, it's funny to see Metlink using the kind of novelty of the new tall buses as an excuse for them not running very well, you know, where they're like, people are just riding the double-deckers for fun and they're going to stop doing that soon and it'll be okay. Like, didn't you put the double-deckers on to deal with higher passenger load?
Yeah.
Like, they should deal with this better.
Yeah.
You know, you should be able to deal with them having lots of people on them. And, you know, obviously, Wellington is kind of an interesting place to run a double-decker bus because historically we had trolley buses in Wellington. You may be aware we had a pretty substantial electric bus fleet here.
Yeah, it was good.
And, you know, that means that in a lot of parts of Wellington, there's still cabling, overhead cabling, there's trees.
Got rid of all of it? Yeah.
No, there's still a bit of it around. So we had, you know, great excited passengers riding the double-deckers down Willis Street, for instance, earlier in the week, hitting all of the trees on Willis Street. Perhaps more concerningly, we had a double-decker that was going to go down Nauronga Gorge and took Nio Gorge instead, and then hit a whole swag of power lines, which upset quite a few of the passengers. The Metlink apparently issued a warning to all drivers that Nio Gorge is not approved for double-deckers, so hopefully that's going to be sorted, but...
Well, yeah, I was heard one bus couldn't get up or down someplace because the tail end of it was...
Yeah, that's right. Stuck. So if you're not from around Wellington, you might not know of our proud history of bus-stuck Wellington. Wellington is a very hilly city with very thin roads. And
thin is an understatement. I'm telling you, so in Hamilton, one of the biggest changes when I moved here was in Hamilton, we have roads that I thought were reasonable. And then I came here, and they will take a... Hamilton Road, half it.
Yep. Park a car on both sides.
Both sides. Yep. And call in two lanes.
Two lanes of bidirectional overlapping traffic using quantum superposition. Yeah.
It's insane. Yep.
And then throw a hairpin bend in.
Yeah. And you can't see it because you just can't.
Yeah. And so that's Alexandra Street. And now, amazingly, so full credit to Wellington's bus drivers, right? They drive on some of the most ridiculous streets I think you'll ever see.
Every time I was in Brooklyn, every morning, I'd be like, this is the morning we crash.
Yep.
And we never did. It was insane.
Yeah, I mean, Wellington buses, they get banged up, right? They hit signs a lot. They, you know, the clipped wing mirror is basically the Wellington badge of honor for owning a car.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Cars, every car just pulls the wing
every single car has the wing mirror clipped. Yeah. But yeah, we had our first, I think, bus stuck on the since the bus apocalypse. So on the bottom of Alexandra Street, we had a report of a bus that's butt was stuck in the ground. So the new number 20 route goes down Alexandra Street, and there's a hairpin bend there, which... Yeah. You know, that's a traditionally tricky terrain for the bus to get around. And, you know, as predicted, they got stuck.
His butt got stuck.
Yeah, just rammed straight into the ground. And, you know, Wellington has a storied history of buses getting stuck. So, you know, it's an area of interest of mine is the old bus stuck Wellington. Yeah. 2016 in particular was a particularly bad year. In 2016, we had... buses stuck on Nian Street. We had a transit bus, not a Metlink bus, stuck on Mana Street. I think there were three buses in as many months got stuck in 2016. Oof, one was particularly bad because there was a dude who was going to the hospital to see the birth of his child.
Oh.
Got stuck behind a bus that took a hairpin.
Man.
Yeah, there's just some truly great stuff. I think Devon Street, you know, notorious. Perhaps my favorite of all, though, has to be the 2013 bus that tried to go the wrong way down State Highway 1 and then got stuck while turning.
Oh my gosh.
That is a true, that is a proper classic, that one.
I don't think I was here in 2013. That does sound crazy though.
Yeah. Bus tried to do a U-turn on State Highway 1 to go down the wrong direction of State Highway 1 and got stuck partway around the U-turn and blocked State Highway 1.
That's awesome. Oh man, that poor bus driver.
Yeah.
I'm hoping, see, I phrased this differently to you. I'm hoping one day, Metlink is like, oh no, we need to run a bus for this route, right? We just need to run a bus for this route. They don't really think about it. They double deck it, sure. It's sitting there, it's waiting, it's at the front, they grab it. And the route is the bus tunnel. And he gets all the way to the bus tunnel before he's like, oh fuck.
Yeah, you know that's going to happen, right?
Like,
Wellington is a place where buses routinely go off, you know, they go off schedule for charters or whatever, and there's just so many places a bus can't go in Wellington.
Yeah, there is a lot of places. I mean, even, like, car driving in fucking Wellington's annoying as well. You're like, oh, if you turn left here, there's, like, one sign, and if you don't see it, you're just going to be fucked. You're going to be going the wrong way, and you've got nowhere to go.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. You can't turn around.
Yeah.
You try turn your car, and it will tumble.
Oh, yeah, someone was saying, like, the wind plus a sharp turn in a double-decker would be...
Yeah, you reckon?
I don't think it's going to happen, because those are so heavy.
Yeah,
they're
buses. Pretty heavy at the bottom. The top's just made of, like, cardboard and passengers. I think they're pretty much all right.
If we can take out trees, it's probably okay.
Yeah, I think they're pretty good. So how are we feeling about the bus apocalypse, Stephen?
How are we feeling? So my partner went to catch a bus because, you know, like I don't catch buses often. If I do, like I caught one maybe like 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. I caught it to like the pet store in like near Newtown. There's like an Animates over there.
Yep.
I don't think it's technically Newtown at that point. That was okay. One thing is it was raining and when catching the bus back, there's no sheltered bus stop there.
Yep.
you know, what are you gonna, we just called an Uber because we're like, we don't want to wait in the rain.
I think Uber's probably doing pretty well out of the bus apocalypse.
Hell yeah. But then we also caught it up to Kai Fora Fora, which is, you know, just up on State Highway 1, is it?
Most things are on State Highway 1.
Yeah. And then, once again, no shelter on the way back, so Ubered. But that was a pleasantly fine experience. We were like, oh, we should check when the buses are, but you don't really need to.
Do we
like,
have a fan in the bus factor zone? Could that be JJJJ Jolly Jim with a light up heart bag?
Is that?
I can't tell. It's dark out there.
That is a light.
If you can hear this, stand in the. Oh yeah. Okay.
Oh.
Stand in the gentle illumination of a blue bus, please. Oh, that's gorgeous. Oh. Thanks for visiting.
Oh, thank you. Hi. It's like slightly blocked out by the hair. Let's get rid of the chat.
Yeah, move the chat for a second, Steve. We'll get JJJJJ Jolly Jim onto the stream.
There we are.
Yeah, hold up that beautiful bag again for us one more time.
You can't actually see all the different colors because our webcam. Also, be careful with the camera. You're shaking the. Whoa.
Yeah, oh, look at that juxtaposition. The blue bus, the RGB LED bag.
The RGB LED bag is slightly brighter.
That's gorgeous. Yes. Yeah, you've managed to outshine the blue buses, so yeah. Congratulations. Well done on that.
We're going to have to do a tweet about this.
Yeah, we will definitely tweet this. Thank you. Thank you for coming by. It's always good to see a fan.
Yeah. Where were we? The buses have been fine, and I basically haven't needed to check when they are or anything.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, right? The old days when the bus went through the entire city, you just got on the bus wherever you were. It was good.
Yeah, and there's going to be a bus, probably, to where you need to go at some point. It's fine.
Yeah, reasonable assumption.
Now, my partner works, we're on Tory Street, and my partner is on, partner works on just by the basin. So she said, like, normally, if it's, like, 10 o'clock at night, or, like, you know, 9, 10, it's off peak. If she wanted to catch a bus, she could basically go out and there'd be one every 10 minutes, 15 minutes for an hour or something.
Yep.
That's from basically Courtney Place to the basin. After
a standard bus route. Standard. Yep.
She said after this change, she went out there the other night and there was like one in that period. So I think because it's hub and spoke now, they have like one primary bus going from the hub here to Newtown. There's just so few buses, and she said it was like completely packed. It was just like the amount of people on
yeah,
that one.
That like not enough buses, packed buses. They're gonna have to tweak that stuff. It's just people. It's not gonna.
Here's
work
my thing.
Well.
They had that data. They had 100%, you know, almost 100% accurate data on every person where they get on and where they get off for the last however many years. How can they fuck it up? They have the numbers. Oh, it's so dumb.
Just take solace, Stephen. Only 23 more episodes of The Bus Factor and the bus apocalypse will be over.
Speaking of episodes of The Bus Factor, did you know it's the 1 year anniversary tomorrow?
How fitting.
Yeah. So bus apocalypse, it's almost like they knew, wasn't it? Dun, 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 dun,
dun. Yeah, we can't comment on, you know, any possibility of feedback from The Bus Factor into the stability or chaos of the Wellington bus system. But I'd like to think that The Bus Factor is a force for good in the Wellington public transport system.
Yeah.
Telling it like it is.
Let me just put the chat back up as well.
Yeah, we should get the chat back in. So yeah, only another 23 weeks. We're 1 week into the 6 month period, which we've been promised the buses are going to be wrecked for, and everything will be great in 23 more episodes.
Going to be wrecked for?
Yeah, you know, the Wellington Regional Council said that. Well, initially they said we should have had another 6 months at this.
Which, as anyone who's worked on a project knows, another 6 months doesn't solve
and
a failing project.
What a nice thing to go and tell people. Like, yeah.
Hey, Reese and Jolly Jim.
Yeah, just go out there and blame a non-specific person for not giving you another 6 months. They kind of like, retconned that into, everybody knew the bus system was going to be wrecked and it'll be fine in 6 months' time. So I'm counting the weeks down, Stephen. I'm counting it by the Bus Factor episodes.
Yeah, good. It's also dumb to just be like, oh, if we had another 6 months. It's like, well, no one told you it had to be done now.
Yeah, that's right. Why did we have to change the buses over right now?
Yeah. Oh, you know what annoys me super bad with projects in general? We get this in IT a lot, I think. I feel like it. Someone starts a project with good intentions. They work on it for a month, 2 months, 6 months. And then they're like, okay, here it is. And everyone's like, whoa, that's horrible. That's actually not solving the problem. And then someone will make a decision. Well, we've spent 6 months on it. We're better to roll it out. And it's like, whoa, no.
The
sometimes you're not.
The sunk cost fallacy.
Yeah, the sunk cost fallacy where it's like, hey, well, it's built now. And it's like, no, we are actually not better to roll that out. And it's really hard Because you can also come across, if you comment on it, you can come across like a like you're kind of just a naysayer. It's like, well, why don't, it's better than nothing, why don't we just roll it out? And it's hard to kind of rationalize or like kind of convince people like, no, I'm not just saying no because I don't want progress. I'm saying no because I genuinely think it's worse.
Wellington, you know, Wellington is a bus powered city, right? People build their lives around the bus routes, the bus schedules, bus commuting.
Because that's how you get around.
Legitimately a big deal for people in Wellington to change the bus system. And it's really the kind of thing that needs to be done compassionately and carefully, I think.
Yeah. I don't know what car ownership is like here, but I don't own a car here.
Yeah, I don't drive.
Most of my friends just don't because...
I know one person who has a car.
Yeah.
And that guy probably really regrets it. Anytime I need something, anything taken anywhere, it's like, hey Ewan.
Yeah.
You want to hang out on the weekend, take some stuff to the dump for me?
Yeah. When I get like stuff ordered to the office or home, I basically have to be like, okay, what's going to be more effort? Trying to find someone who has a car to help me move whatever it is from the office to home.
Yeah, or just living in the office from now.
I wish. We've had people do that here. Just, you joke about it, but or you know, going home for the day, because that's how it works with deliveries.
Yeah, that's right. You
and know, then sometimes I'll just
possibly
be like,
turn up at some point during the day.
Yeah, we often get, oh, can't deliver it, and I'm like, what? What do you mean can't deliver it? And they're like, we couldn't deliver it. And I'm like, did you not? Like,
yeah.
Did you
also, also in the news this week, really poor treatment of courier drivers by New Zealand Post. Apparently making less than minimum wage. Yeah,
that's not legal.
No, it's not great, is it? Yeah. It's not great. Maybe go some way to explaining the spottiness of courier delivery in general. But I think we kind of already knew that couriers were basically being run ragged and, you know, didn't really care for any particular individual delivery.
I think it's
I think this came out of the, this is mildly security related. This came out of the courier who left a gun on the porch of someone's house in the North Island.
Well, it was like a sign.
Yeah, it was like signature required, and they were like, oh, I am so busy for that, and just left it on the porch, like big gun-shaped cardboard packet.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah. And that happens a lot, right? Like, I got a passport delivered today, which thankfully I presume got signed for, but my mum got one delivered once, and they just gave it to the wrong house.
Yep.
Like, they just gave it to the wrong house, didn't get it signed for. And she was like, what? It says it's delivered. And then the courier company is like, no, you signed for it. And it's like, what?
Or
no,
the old classic where the courier driver just signs the name that's on the package themselves and biffs it through a doorway. Yeah.
We, in the last company, one of the people there like flipped out at a courier. He was like, what the fuck? Like, it's signed. You can't just leave shit lying in our foyer where anyone can grab it if it says sign on it. And the guy's like, oh, sorry, I'm really busy. Which, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's bad from both ends.
But the other thing is, like, so one thing with Chorus, right? Chorus does the internet here. They suck.
Sure do love Chorus.
Yeah, I say do the internet. They don't really.
They do the wires.
They try and do the wires.
They do some of the wires. They do the last mile. They do the local loop.
Yeah, well, they try to.
Yeah, they have a go.
If you don't like Chorus because they're completely incompetent, you don't have another choice. It feels kind of like that. It's exactly the same with buses, right? If you don't, you just catch a different public transport. What? That doesn't exist.
Yeah, there's a you know, a bit of a power inequality here.
Yeah, where we are just at the mercy of these people who.
At least Metlink has been responding to feedback, right? Like, everybody understands that the bus system was going to be wrecked, right? If you're going to change it.
Well, there was the Stuff poll, wasn't there?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So Stuff conducted the poll. The week before the busapocalypse, that's last week, over 4,000 respondents, 86% of them had no confidence in the replacement bus system.
Yeah.
And frankly, that's realistic, right?
Yeah.
You take a giant, sprawling, organic thing that requires thousands of people to run, like a full citywide bus system, and you shake the whole thing up, it's going to be a mess. You just can't avoid that.
Yeah, I think even people who worked at Metlink and the city council would have been like, yeah, no confidence.
Yeah, there was a great quote in, I can't remember where it was, some news publication, dude from the council saying like, yeah, I can give you an ironclad guarantee that there are going to be problems.
Yeah.
I think that's a great way to put it.
Yeah. You have no choice. What was I going to say? What were we talking about before this? Chorus, before I mentioned Chorus and the buses and choice.
Package deliveries, couriers leaving guns.
Here's my question. Why is there not a good courier company?
Yeah, you'd think that they would just wreck the other ones, right?
Because if there was a courier company who was like, hey, it costs $2 extra, but we won't fuck up your packages, you'd be like, yeah, I'll pay that.
Yeah.
$2 to know when my package is going to be delivered?
I just wonder if there aren't enough Stevens who are willing to pay the extra $2.
Like, I don't know. It feels like there should be.
It's hard to tell how many people send courier packages.
Yeah, I guess the thing is they tend to treat businesses better as well. Like, deliveries, the way they work is they do all of the business deliveries.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
And then at the end of the day, if they've got time, they'll do some home ones whenever they get around to it.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, as a business where you're actually sending lots of packages, you get treated pretty well. And as a home user who orders like one every month, one every 6 months, one every year.
Yeah, they're not going to work out how to get into your apartment complex.
Yeah, like, you know, press the button that says apartment 9. Like, like, do you know, like, how is that a problem? It's kind of just weird that, like, people, carrier drivers especially, like, they're doing the not knocking thing. They go up to a house and they just, nah, can't deliver it. You
yeah.
know?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So speaking of things that don't work very well, do we want to talk a bit about the cybersecurity thing at Waikato
Uni? Cybersecurity challenge, yeah, okay. So
I wasn't there, so I'm going to hand this one over to you, Stephen. Okay, you give us the rundown.
I'll give some background first. This is a event organized by the Waikato University in conjunction with some of their partners, I think. Ryan Coe, who's like, he has a title. He's like the cybersecurity professor integrated with police, works in multiple countries. He's the best, you know, just like every blah, whatever. He's in academia. He has a title. He runs this. Yeah, so it's got who was there this year? The police, what's like the GCSB?
NCSC.
NCSC, yeah, that's it. We're
totally not CERT.
Oh, CERT was there separately.
Yep.
Yeah. So it was there, kind of, some CERT representatives were there. Rob Pope spoke, who's, I think, the director or something of CERT. There's Gallagher. You know how they actually pronounce it Gallagher?
So the racist fence company.
Yeah, that's it. You know them. When I was in Hamilton, everyone said Gallagher. But then
yeah, that's how we pronounce it. That's how their own employees pronounce it.
And then I went there, and their own employee was like, no, Gallagher.
Just so that everyone's clear, the dude who owns the company is a massive racist.
Yeah, so he was like, the Treaty of Waitangi is
colossal racist.
A rort was the term they used. Yeah. And he like a massive rant at some dinner. Yeah,
so don't buy stuff from Gallagher. But anyway, they sell pool fences, and they sell RFID security systems.
What else are you going to buy? Yeah, we're in New Zealand.
Yeah, it's not that easy. But anyway, tell us about the cybersecurity thing.
Yeah, so it's a CTF, essentially. CTF is not quite the right term. It's like it's the closest thing, though. It's like a CTF for students. So this is...
But it's like a red team, blue team thing as well, right?
They have different stages. So
okay, right.
They have round zero, which is completely online. And they take the top 400 participants or something in New Zealand. So you have to be in New Zealand. Then you go to the university physically. It's a two-day event, Friday, Saturday. Friday was job fair, talks, that kind of thing. So I did a talk about physical security, RFID, lockpicking, you know, all that kind of stuff. And then the second day is when they do, like, the challenge. And that's round one is, you know, like a pretty standard capture the flag. Round two is policy multi-choice questions. And round three is the red team, blue team defend. So I guess, like, generally speaking, I would be pro this event. I am pro this event because the idea of taking
it's a decent idea.
Yeah, it's a decent idea. There are some like execution things that aren't super great with it though. And I mean, I'm not gonna go over them. There were some really great things. The catering was great, and like, if you go to an event and it's in Hamilton and it's a Saturday, so nothing at the university is open. Catering is like a godsend.
Absolutely.
Otherwise, you'd
thumbs up for the catering. Yeah. I mean, I wasn't there, but I've heard from multiple people that the catering was good.
It was a highlight. They also had like a women's panel. So they got four or five women in kind of tech, and they did like a bit of a panel thing.
Yeah, that's great. That's what we wanted.
The women were great as well. Like the people they picked, there was some CERT people and some other people and blah, 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 blah. But there were some downsides, like
some industry controversy here.
Yeah. So the red team, blue team, it didn't work because they had never load tested it. So they had like something like it was between 60 and 90 virtual machines on a single QMU instance that they had never load tested. So the
pen testing doesn't ever unintentionally create load on a system, though.
Well, but the thing is, we didn't even get to the pen testing component. They booted the boxes. We like installed Chrome and Burp, and then everything went down. Eventually, that segment was already running 2 hours late, so I was meant to finish at 6. We started at 6. It got to 8 p.m. and still nothing worked, so we had to just be like, I guess we're leaving? Like, we, you know, I don't know. So, yeah, but...
Obviously, some stuff to work on there.
Yeah, but my main problem with this event Well, with this kind of event, it's not actually a big problem with them, is when you have things associated with university, the university is a business, and I think the core purpose of a university nowadays is to make money. You know, people can argue one way or another. But
yeah, I think that's pretty well understood at this point, right? Yeah. You know, X all the art departments, make as much money off engineering as you can.
Yeah. They have an incentive to tell every student that they must have a degree. So there was a talk there.
But wait, are you trying to tell me, Stephen, that you don't necessarily have to have an expensive degree to be in the InfoSec industry?
You heard it here first. I'm making that claim. One of the talks was titled CISSP and Why It Matters to Your Career. And for anyone who's been to a hacker conference, you would think, oh, it's a parody talk about why you don't need a CISSP. It was not a parody talk. It was like a CISSP is good. You need an CISSP. Someone told me that one of the things that got said was, if you don't have a degree, you can't make it in the InfoSec industry. You can't. You just can't do it. You can't.
Well, I mean, everyone that we know and work with has a CISSP.
Oh,
so.
I know, right? We counted for our company, and less than half have a degree. And of the people who do have a degree, a large portion are either not relevant, like just not relevant degrees, or wouldn't matter anyway.
It's so nice that they were so modest not to tell you about their CISSP that they spent so long getting.
Yeah. I don't know. So I during the event stated multiple times, I was like, hey, just FYI to anyone who like doesn't want to do uni, I use the term who doesn't want to put themselves through that with reference to university. At that point they were filming us, and one of the guys put the camera down like away from me, and like some of the faculty like facepalmed. I was like, you don't need a degree. So, I don't know.
Well, I'll look forward to that clip being put up on the Waikato Uni website.
I'm not sure if it will be. I don't know. Yeah, I like the idea of the event more than the event itself, but I'm happy to go back next year and, like, see it improve and get better. Because the thing is, like, at least someone's trying. A lot of the InfoSec industry tends to be like, oh, we need to get more people in InfoSec. We'll run training at a hacker conference, which is, like, not super productive.
That's really the kind of like, oh hey, there's a new tech and you want to spend 24 hours getting blasted with it, come along and find out what it's about. So JJJJJJJ Jolly Jim on the chat here says that they were at the cybersecurity thing and were told that when they couldn't log into things, it was because it was being attacked.
Oh, they told us you were attacking when we couldn't actually log in. No, yeah. So from our perspective was different, because we were sitting next to the guys who were trying to get... I say guys. We're sitting next to the one person at the Cybersecurity Challenge who was running all of the infrastructure, and he was trying to get it working, and no, we couldn't attack. We logged in, and then before it actually got started, everything crashed, massive reboots. They like disabled monitoring. So Crow, which is the computer... it's some like part of Waikato Uni. They make a thing called Progger. Hey, how do you feel about this? This is what Progger is. I don't know if you have heard of Progger.
I have not heard of Progger.
It's a kernel module.
I love kernel modules. Just putting it out there. So I'm biased towards it already. But go on.
You're gonna love this. It logs every syscall made, and bats it out of a TCP to a logger. So
And
it's that is, I believe, their primary product. Like the crowning output of the Crow is this. And they're like, look, it only increases the amount of time it takes to do an open call by like 600% and uses TCP.
Is that also not literally what Audit D is? I don't know.
I don't know if does Audit D do syscalls?
Yeah.
Okay, then yes, I guess it is. I mean, I presume they have a reason for this. My thing is, like, surely that's not a sustainable architecture to run a kernel module that just spats things out of a TCP.
Well, I mean, if you want to S-trace every single process on your system, then... like, not everything is really slowed down by S-trace. Some workloads don't mind it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let me tell you, when you do it on literally everything and you have 90 VMs on a single GPU instance...
it seems unwise.
And you've never load-tested it... yeah, no.
Okay, so obviously some. I think everyone's giving Waikato pretty good feedback, right? Like,
yeah, everyone did.
They did ask for feedback, and feedback is being provided.
Feedback is being provided. And like I said, I enjoy that the event exists, and I'm happy to go back next year, and I think
it sounds like good fun.
Yeah,
if it worked, it would have been fun. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. And I think it's worked in previous years. I do think the InfoSec industry doesn't do enough to get new people involved. Like, you know how there's like, oh, we need more people, and it's like, oh, do you want to take on an intern?
Yeah.
No.
But it's like, we need more people, but also this is a culturally very exclusive club. You have to like meddle and wear black. Sorry.
there's also the thing where it's like, this came up so many times. If you ask kind of the more corporate people at the challenge, how do you get a job? They're like, get a degree. And if you ask the non-corporate people at the cybersecurity challenge, how do you get a job? They're like, oh, you have to know people. If you don't know people, then you're not getting a job, buddy. And it's like, that's a pretty sad state of, like, that's not great to be telling kids, like, unless you know people.
Especially when companies in the InfoSec business are actively trying to hire people and trying to find new people, right? That's not...
They say that, but how many take on interns? How many are willing to pay a decent living wage to an intern who hasn't done InfoSec before?
Well, maybe that would help.
Yeah, I think it would help. That's my axe to grind when it comes to InfoSec challenge shortage.
This is pretty much how the world worked, right? Apprenticeships, if you wanted to be a thing, you went and did that thing for a while and learned how to do it. And it seems to work.
Yeah, it seems great.
It's like, if I had had someone who was like, hey, this is how you do sysadmining properly, I wouldn't have wasted the first like 10 years of being a sysadmin.
Yeah, but think of all the experience you have now. Yeah, of the wrong way of doing things.
Sure loved getting that experience.
Yeah, it's like you know when new people are like, oh, you know, why is this bad or how do you do this? And you're kind of like, just don't, like, I know that's bad. And like, how do you know? It's like, because I spent 10 years doing it.
Yeah, there is an entire universe of knowledge that I have to give you first. Like, we're going to have to make a universe from scratch to explain why this is a bad apple pie.
Yeah, yeah. And some of them are like really... Yeah, like with the TCP like kernel module thing, that's one of those things where you're like, I guess it works like conceptually, but it just feels like a bad architecture.
Yeah, and that it's not the first time, you know, proper actual kernel hackers have made this mistake before, right? Like the classic kernel serial printk bug in Ubuntu where too much printk would fill up the serial buffer and lock up the thing while it emptied the serial buffer. Like, you know, that's a real bug that happened in real production thing made by real, like, core Linux people.
That
so.
Yeah, you're kind of like, how'd they make that bug? But it happens, yeah.
Yeah, it was hard to get rid of that.
Okay, I think we're about done for today, actually. So I don't think we talked much about InfoSec news.
I don't know if anything happened this week. I mean, I've been sick for most of the week, so...
Oh, that sucks. Very briefly, there was a bug in Intel ME products... where the HTTP daemon, just give you like buffer overflow, bring -3.
Just scream into it. Get, yeah. Yep.
It's like the, there's a bug a while ago where you just like connection keep alive,
A couple hundred A's in connection keep alive overwrites the is_authenticated variable on the stack and away you go.
Yeah. That's so good.
The world of IPMI security is a fraught one. Yeah. You know, between Metal Storm's, oh, if I just don't send a username and password, I get root. And,
oh, yeah, that's always a good one. Or like,
I could download the configuration from this IPMI pre-auth and get the password out of it in plain text, et cetera.
I also like the, what's the other one? Yeah, what auth method do you want to use? Have you got the null method? Yeah, we got that one. Null method, go ahead.
Oh man, null cipher, you're here for speed.
Okay, I think we're about done for today. We've gone slightly over time, but it was the bus.
Thanks for joining us for the bus apocalypse special. Mm-hmm. Keep in mind, only another 23 weeks of bus apocalypse, and then we'll be back to InfoSec news.
It's gonna flick right over. It's gonna be perfect after that.
Pop over at that 23 week mark, and things will be back to normal.
Feel free to like just send this link to when we upload it. Send it to Metlink. Just send it.
Please,
send them 100 copies.
Don't send this link to Metlink. Metlink is already having a difficult enough time. They don't need us summarizing all of the news about the stuff they screwed up,
including their responses to it as well. Like, and Metlink said this.
I feel like Metlink doesn't stand to gain much from that.
So
I asked if I could take some photos on one of the new buses and told them that it was for a podcast about the bus. So.
Oh, really? Yeah. I think some of them must know about the bus factor. Well, there's the angry bus driver on Twitter who got angry at us once.
Yeah.
So it happens. I feel sorry for bus drivers. Okay. We're going to end it here for today.
Good night, everyone.
Good night. We'll see you next time. I'm finding the outro credits as one. Bye.